Promises come in a variety of different forms. Consider the promise that cannot be fulfilled. I could tell you that I have a diet plan in which you could eat junk food, cheeseburgers, chocolate, soda pop, and you would lose weight. This might be an appealing promise. It might be attractive. But I can't deliver on it. Then there's the promise that is technically true, but really isn't going to come to pass. Consider, well-meaning they were. My parents told me I could grow up to be anything I wanted to be. They promised me that. But it became pretty clear early on during my less than stellar Little League career, I was not going to grow up to be a professional baseball player. Then there are promises that can be kept, but are meaningless for all intents and purposes. I can promise you that tonight the sun will set, and tomorrow it will rise. This will come to pass, barring some kind of cosmic calamity. And then there are the promises that have meaning. The promises that we care about. The promises that are made by people or institutions we trust. They usually speak to a need or a desire. They usually involve some kind of investment. And these can be promises of things that will happen now, or promises of things that may happen in the future. So consider, one spouse or partner comes home after a long day at work, and you say, I promise I will do all of the chores tonight. And you do. And that is a promise that is kept and appreciated. Or one can say to a child, I will take you to a baseball game in the spring, and there is a promise to think about and to hold on to and to look forward to and to cherish until the day of the big game. And then there can be the promise of a parent to that same child during a time of upset or anxiety. I promise I will sit with you, and I will hold you, and I will be with you now. And in that moment, the child experiences comfort and assurance and love. But part of the reason this particular promise has special power is that it is not only operative now in the present, but it also offers an implicit promise to be present in the future. It addresses the anxiety, the hurt, the upset that may occur down the road. And so, in a sense, the future is brought into the present. The promise operates in different dimensions. The reading that Deb shared with us a few moments ago, what we call the Beatitudes, are a series of promises of that last kind. Now, this is one of those texts that we all know so well, but that familiarity can actually obscure its meaning to us. When we hear the words over and over and over again, we may not get to reflect on what is going on. Part of the problem for us is the translation. We know the words, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Beautiful words, but they seem a little vague, passive perhaps, speaking to those people, the poor in spirit, whoever they may be, wherever they are. But what if we read the words differently? What if we read them the way N.T. Wright translates them? Blessings on the poor in spirit, The kingdom of heaven is yours. Blessings on the mourners. You're going to be comforted. Blessings on the meek. You're going to inherit the earth. Blessings on people who hunger and thirst for God's justice. You're going to be satisfied. Blessings on the merciful. You'll receive mercy yourselves. Blessings on the pure in heart. You will see God. Blessings on the peacemakers. You'll be called God's children. Blessings on people who are persecuted because of God's way. The kingdom of heaven belongs to you. You notice the difference here? The shift in tense and emphasis? It's no longer passive. It is active. And it's no longer talking about the third person, they, but the second person, you. Jesus here is speaking to you and you and you and me. And he's not talking about something that will take place in the distant future. We know that from his use of the words, kingdom of heaven. Heaven isn't some place out there, separate, apart from our existence. No, heaven is part of God's creation. It is part of God's realm. And everything is part of God's realm. Heaven, earth, it all comes together. And this new reality of God's is breaking in right now as we gather here for worship. Just as it was breaking in as Jesus preached to the disciples and the crowds who gathered around. Now, there are some who might look around and say, considering the state of the world these days, I'm not quite sure about this kingdom of heaven business. The poor in spirit still seem to be poor in spirit. Mourners are still sad. Peacemakers aren't appreciated. The meek, the humble, they sure don't seem to be inheriting anything. It all seems nice. It all seems aspirational. But it seems like an empty promise. Well, if we let the way of the world be our way, then maybe that's true. But not if we follow the way of Jesus. If these are promises that are operative in the present, we as Christians, we as the faithful, are called to live as if they are true, to live as if they are unfolding right now. And imagine what that would mean for us. Consider this. The past few days as I was working on this sermon, I had occasion to be put out with somebody. And I was annoyed. And I began to work myself up into a high dudgeon. And then I thought about this passage. And I thought, blessed are the peacemakers. You are children of God. Well, if I'm being angry, I can't be a peacemaker, can I? If I'm being angry, I am letting something get in the way of my being a child of God. Maybe I need to let the anger and annoyance go. It doesn't mean there may not be an issue that's got to be addressed at some point in the future. But maybe there's a different way to deal with it. Look at all of these beatitudes and look at the ways that we in the world can create obstacles to the fulfillment of these promises. And then think about what would happen if each and every one of us in this church lived as if these words were true. And then imagine if the people in every church lived as if these words are true. 1.2 billion Christians living like these promises are real and taking them to heart? Can you imagine how different the world would be, what it would look like? The kingdom of heaven would be visible to everybody. It would be amazing. And we know people are looking for this kind of vision to come to pass. There I was in the bookstore the other day. And whose face do I see on the cover of Rolling Stone? Pope Francis. Rock star. After years and years and years of bad news coming out of the church, someone comes along to offer a hopeful vision of what the ministry of Jesus Christ can be. And the media is eating it up. Why? Because people want this hope. People want these promises. People want the strength and the courage to live as if they are true. Maybe it's hard for some folks to see themselves amongst those to whom Jesus is preaching. But Matthew offers a way for each of us to enter into this story. There's some commentators who like to criticize Matthew. They hold up his version of the sermon next to Luke's, and they find it wanting. Because Luke said, "Blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Matthew is seen as compromising, as dulling a sharp revolutionary message. I think they are wrong. Matthew is not obscuring anything. Matthew is expanding a circle. Oh, the poor are definitely included in the poor of the spirit. There is a terrible weight to be borne when someone is struggling to pay the bills and get the meds and put a roof over one's children's head. But it's not just money that creates anxiety and fear and loss and separation. Rich, poor, middle class, everybody at some time or another can find himself or herself poor in spirit. Feeling left out, alone, bereft, ignored, uncared for, unloved. And what does the world tell people when they're in that situation? Man up. Deal with it. Get a move on. You're not the only person who's ever had to deal with a tough situation. You're on your own. But what does God tell us? You're feeling alone, bereft, you're mourning, you're persecuted, you're on the outs, you're poor in spirit, you're getting the kingdom of heaven. You're in. The one who is saying this is the parent, the father, the mother who comes and tells us, "I'm here for you. Right now and in the future, in this place and every place. Yours is the kingdom of heavens. You right there in these pews. Me right here in this pulpit. The kingdom of heaven is ours." God's sharing it with us. God's calling us to it. And God so desperately wants us to come be there, to be part of it, to help build it, to live as if the promise is true. To know that God's future is here with us now.